Hello, and welcome to another edition of Ray's Music Reviews, a podcast where we talk about music. We are joined by
KP.
And me, Ray, of Ray's Music Reviews. Yeah. We are doing Jay-Z's The Blueprint. This album was released on 2001. It was produced by Kanye West. Pretty underground producer.
Parts of it were produced by Kanye West.
Parts, and other parts were produced by somebody. I forget the name, but he's really good.
Oh yeah, this album. Well put together. Yeah.
It is refined.
Yeah, absolutely.
To the highest degree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this, you probably know who Jay-Z is.
You can't really be on the planet and not know who Jay-Z is at this point. I mean, he's married to Beyonce. And he's part owner of the, well, he was part owner of the Brooklyn Nets. I don't know for sure if he still is. I would think he still is. He was with Dame Dash Rockefeller, and then they had like a split up. So he's been a clothing thing. He's sold everything from water to basketball. So,
and
you know.
Just remembering, like, no, I'm not, of course I don't remember, but
just made the Yankee hat famous because Babe Ruth didn't.
Nope, not at all.
Reggie Jackson didn't. Nope. Jay-Z did that.
Yeah.
That's the one line he says that drives me crazy. I get it. When I think of Jay-Z, I think of a Yankee hat on his head. But also, I live in Pensacola. I probably see 4 Yankee hats a day. And that's a long way away from New York.
Yeah.
And always have.
And he was really big. Apparently he was super big back when this dropped.
Dude, from, let's see, the first record was what, 96?
96, yeah.
Something like that?
Reasonable Doubt, 96.
You're talking Reasonable Doubt, In My Lifetime, Volume 1, Hard Knock Life. Yeah, he was killing it at this point.
Yeah, he even dropped an MTV Unplugged.
Well, think about it. He and Kanye, when Kanye comes out, do a record together, and it's not as big a deal as these records were.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was on fire. And to this day, if he decides to do something, it'll matter.
Well, this album specifically, The Blueprint, is apparently one of the 3 classics he dropped.
Considered, yes.
It's probably the most popular, I would roughly say. It's probably more popular than Reasonable Doubt. I don't know if it's more popular than Black Album.
I don't know. I think with Jay-Z, how old you were in 96, how old you were in 98, how old you were in 2001 would matter as to which one you think is more important. Like, because it's a Hard Knock Life, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing those kids singing that hook. On that, you know what I mean. There's same with some of these songs, you know. Izzo, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing Izzo.
Yeah. Should we just talk about the album?
Let's get into it.
Okay. It starts with The Ruler's Back.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ruler's Back is a pretty good song, like a really good, especially as an opener.
Right, and he begins the process of explaining who he is. I feel like, and why you should care again on this, which obviously you should have already known if you were listening, but early in this record, he is telling you and anointing himself the most important thing there is, and specifically going at Nas and a couple other people in that process, right?
Which, correct me if I'm wrong, but he probably was, right?
Was right how?
Like, he probably was the biggest thing in hip hop at that time.
Man, hip hop is so fluid when things like that happen. It all just depends on who just dropped the last thing that's hot.
Yeah.
Back then, especially. You know what I mean? Like now, it's even fast forwarded that.
Yeah.
Like now, when somebody drops a record, like let's say Post Malone drops a record, 10 songs off that record will be in the top 10 immediately. But then in a month,
there's going to be one left.
Right. Whereas, you know, back then, you would drop something hot and you would schedule out your releases to keep you important for 5 months, 6 months. Your videos and that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Which
yeah.
just doesn't happen
you can't,
anymore.
You can't do that now.
No, because somebody else drops something and all of a sudden it's the top five, you know?
People just drop albums out of nowhere nowadays. And it,
right.
You can't.
Well, and the thing is, too, the way singles are made now, everything is released in a single format, streaming-wise, at one time. Whereas before, I could do that one at a time.
When I say something like, there's never going to be another Jay-Z, there's never going to be another Eminem, it's not because there's never going to be anyone as talented as those people. It's because there's never going to be someone who is able to have that time work in their advantage.
Right.
And make them the star that they are.
At that point, in different eras, popularity was calculated in a way that allowed you to be omnipresent.
You just can't do that anymore.
Right. Well, and not only that, there isn't like I read this thing earlier and it had nothing to do with this, but someone was talking about how MTV at one time was so embedded in the culture, they would take counterculture and turn it into culture through their programming. MTV Raps, Headbangers Ball, 120 Minutes, all those things, right? And so if you were on TRL, if you were in the afternoon, you'd go make it. If you were on that, you know, half the country came home from school and watched that, you know, or half the children, teenagers, right? And the college kids watched a different segment of MTV. And so then you had this weird thing that was, this is back when, you won't believe this, MTV at one point played music. It was wild.
It's crazy.
They were able to, you know, if you could get in good with that scenario, they kept you on top because it was to their benefit to have somebody that was cooperative in showing up be on top. It made them cool.
Yeah.
They created stars that pushed stars. Much like the record studios were able to do years prior to that, or if you go far enough back, like it used to be, if you were a comedian and you could kill it on Johnny Carson, you were off and running.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's always been something like that that could do that. In this moment in time, there isn't it. YouTube does that. And who becomes that on YouTube is completely, you're better with this than I am, just due to your age, is semi-random, right?
Yes, it really just depends on whether how big the game they're playing is, how the last one got big was that he started playing a hit game and then he dropped music. So like that's like he got like a million subs and then he started dropping music.
He created an audience.
Yeah.
And then issued his talent to the audience.
And this is coming from somebody
that's interesting.
When I was like real, real young, like this is like 2009, right? I remember like I don't remember, but there was this feeling when pop was big,
yeah.
Even like in 2009, like Lady Gaga was one of the first names I had ever heard of any celebrity.
Right.
And you fast forward that to now, what really kind of didn't burn it down, but what really kind of changed all that was, do you know somebody by the name of Lord?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When
she dropped Royals.
Uh-huh.
And she, oh.
Struts do a killer color cover of that, by the way.
Yeah, and when she said, oh, we'll never be royals, that kind of had a big impact on pop music. When she said, oh, we'll never be royals, we'll never be, most pop music is stuff that we'll never be able to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed pop kind of, maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. But it changed it into being less bigger, larger than life than it is. And this is kind of, and this album is kind of a it was when pop was maximum larger than life.
Right. And hip hop too.
And it feels like it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hip-hop especially, but yes, absolutely.
And it feels like... And this entire album just kind of feels like this is a star cementing his legacy.
Absolutely, and letting you know it. And one thing he does, too, in this... And he really gets hook-heavy, and the production gets really great as we get into to later parts of it. But one thing he does early on here, too, not only does he flex where he says... His flows are this, his flows are that, which is something every really good rapper can kind of sort of do. Maybe not with the resume he had at this point, but he flexes in a way. To me, the biggest flex on Nas here, and you can, you know, I'd take Nas in a rap battle over Jay-Z.
Yeah.
You know, but not that it's a blowout, and I get it if you go the other way, but where he really flexes here is when he tells Nas, or when he says, I know who I pay, you know, Nas had a problem or said something about, you know, you stole my song in order to be cool or whatever, right? And I'm oversimplifying. I don't have to be too specific.
Because you have to.
Well, and two, if I try to rap here, I'm going to sound really stupid, so I'm just going to...
Just say it.
Gloss, right?
Yeah.
But what he does here is he says, I know who I paid for the rights to your music. You didn't own that. It wasn't your song. You were just on it. And that was a big flex because Jay-Z was his own record label. Jay-Z owned his own. You know, he took, and when he says a blueprint, he's describing in a lot of this his life as a, it's a well-told story that he was a drug dealer at one time. He worked his way through that. He utilized this rap game to create another system. He joined up with Dame Dash, created Rockefeller Records. He becomes a mogul, a corporation unto himself. He points out in here, I'm not just talent. I'm the guy. I'm the boss. If we're playing a video game and you want to win and get the boss level, you got to get to me. You can get killed on the first level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the big, to me, that's the huge point, because he does describe not only his blueprint as far as this guy who's in jail, maybe alluding to the fact that that guy was in jail to help him out to get through his issues on the streets, I'll take care of your family, all those things. He's not only alluding to that, he's also alluding to, I've built a corporation. I'm not just
absolutely
the MC, but yeah. I'm both. You know what I mean? Which is really, he was one of the blueprint guys.
He is announcing that he is larger than hip-hop.
Right. You know who else was like that? It's funny. And you could take it many, many, many years earlier. Sam Cooke. Sam Cooke had his own record label. And you think about how completely different they are in eras, but how similar that one aspect of realizing in the game. He tells the story of Bobby Womack being mad about his right, selling the song rights to... I think it's All Over Now by the Rolling Stones was a Bobby Womack written song. Yeah. Bobby Womack gets money, goes all the way to 99. He's mad because Sam Cooke sold the rights to the Stones.
Yes.
Sam Cooke says he was mad till he got his check for having the number one song in the world. Then all that changes, right? Yeah. Okay, you can sell it to, he said, as Sam Cooke says, you know, I had those little white boys working for me. And he was one of the few men in that era able to do that on that level because he invested his money in a record label, that kind of thing. And Jay-Z was able to do that as well.
Yeah.
I might have gone overboard there, sorry.
Yeah. No, you didn't go overboard. I wasn't saying yeah as if you got overboard. I was just kind of...
That was a lot.
Yeah. But to go back on what you said before we started this whole huge conversation... Mm-hmm. The production on this album, immaculate. Like,
oh, dude. Yeah, you knew. Like, you didn't know who Kanye... I make fun sometimes because Jay-Z's voice isn't always the best for me. I appreciate the discography. Yeah. He's very good. It's just his voice is kind of... It weirds me out a little bit. But I remember I said, is there a way I can get this record instrumental.
Just, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the sounds behind his vocals are just incredible. And he is a great storyteller. And storytelling is kind of the point of art anyway. So Go ahead.
Yeah, this entire album is just really good from start to finish. Okay. What was your favorite song? I'm gonna go generic. I'm gonna pick out two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna pick out Izzohova.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm pronouncing that. I think I've been pronouncing that wrong my whole life.
Okay.
But yeah, that's I get that's kind of a generic answer, but it's probably because I do know it the best and I am so familiar with it. I'm also gonna pick out All I Need.
Mm-hmm.
Because just for the fact that when I first was listening to this album, I was like, oh, that's cool. He made a reference to the Guess I Made My Swagger Back line.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this is the Guess I Made Got My Swagger Back line.
Right. 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 Dude, I probably would go Heart of the City because I'm a the hook on that Bobby Blue Bland hook is just so good, and I know it's almost cheating to say I love that song the most because I love the song that it stems from. You know what I mean? But by the same token, I just never can. If I hear that song, it'll take me 2 days to get it out of my head.
Yeah.
Whenever it plays.
It's... What was your least favorite song?
I'm not a huge fan of Song Cry. I get why it's here. You kind of have to have some form of a... There are moments in Song Cry that get me, though. I will say that. I'm not crazy about... Let me rephrase that. I like Girls, 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 but I really like Girls, Girls, Girls Part 2, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, I had the same opinion. I was going to pick my least favorite as Girls, Girls, Girls.
It feels a... Well, that's the other thing when you go back any type of music and you view it through the prism of the current time period, you can kind of... Yeah. There are moments in here where he'll say something that nowadays he probably wouldn't say, right?
Yeah.
He'd figure out a different way. Or just figure out a different way to say it. And to me, part two is a little more flattering to women than part one, if that makes sense.
I also think Girls, Girls, Girls Part 2 is just kind of like a better version of Girls, Girls, Girls Part 1 in like every way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the first Girls, Girls, Girls they made, and Jay-Z was like, actually, I think you guys can make this better.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they did,
throw in a little different hook, little different this, yeah.
And then when they did, he was like, I don't really feel like throwing the first one off the album. Just stick that on the last.
Well, he is. I think he liked Girls, Girls, Girls when he put it out.
He probably did.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
But I don't really have much else to complain about.
Are we rating this?
Are we rating this? Sure, I might. I might rate this like maybe 8 to an 8.5.
Yeah.
I could bump it up like a little higher given time, but I don't really know how much time I've given.
I would give it a 7. Okay. I really like this record, but there are more than 100 rap albums I like better than this. Or rap and hip-hop, whatever.
You also think Jay-Z sounds like he's crying.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So there's a limitation there to what I can... Now, I will say this, though, too. If you take, like, Jay-Z's hits and put them on a record, that's off the chain, because he's got a decade full of just bangers.
Yeah.
Also, one good thing,
literally going from 1996 to 2017... He's got that's not even a decade. That's near 20 years of hits.
To piggyback off of how many hits he's got, and how the same year he released the Blueprint, he did MTV Unplugged, which is funny that we're talking about. You know, like,
yeah,
there's this huge thing about how is Nirvana Unplugged better than Alice Chained Unplugged better than Pearl Jam Unplugged better than, when they rate these albums. Jay-Z's in that pile of albums they're rating highly on the Unplugged list. First of all, the songs, it's that set list is off the chain. And the Roots play for him there. And I've told you this story before.
Yeah.
The story goes that Jay-Z and that the Roots were like, okay, we're going to rehearse. We got to get together and rehearse. And Jay-Z said, why are we going to rehearse for? And they were like, well, we got to get everything right because, we're a band and you don't usually play with bands. And he said, I'm an MC. I don't rehearse. I go out there and I throw a party. I run the show. You guys figure out how the songs are supposed to sound. I'll go out there and rap over them. I don't need to waste my time rehearsing.
Yeah.
and to talk about the level of MC that he went out there and just killed it, and then they put it right there with all these other unplugged performances is just off the chain.
I will also say that this probably isn't even my favorite Jay-Z album. That would probably go to Reasonable Doubt.
Right. Okay. Debut. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
So I
don't think that's necessarily right for now. I actually kind of want to go back.
Go ahead.
To the original, to the big pop conversation. Now that we're kind of done.
Now
we
move through that. Let's go to this.
I feel like I kind of want to go a little bit back to the conversation about Royals, about Lord Royals. Lord actually wrote Royals when she was 15.
Wow.
Lord actually says something about like how she doesn't think Royals is really her best song, and I do agree to an extent, but I think how Royals changed pop music, it's interesting, right? When you go back to the history of music and every genre is seemingly a rebuttal to a different genre that got big, right? Like punk was a rebuttal to the self idolizing prog rock of, say, the 70s, 60s?
It was a rebuttal probably to the socioeconomics of the time, living in certain areas of London and then wind up being New York, and B, also your Beatles being so over the top, your Zeppelin being so over the top.
Yeah.
Eventually things get so big and so refined that people do strip it down and become different.
Yeah, and you go back to some of that stuff like Inagata of Davida, like that song is kind of everything punk is against.
Right. Well, also think about this. The grunge movement and Green Day and that version of alt radio was a reaction to what hair metal became, and then you also, you would have even the Aerosmiths, which at one time were stripped down, or the Guns N' Roses, which was one time stripped down. Now they're playing with orchestras, and you have all these other things. So you wind up, it's a rebuttal to what at one time becomes this thing that's so overblown, and everything eventually winds up getting pulled back down and simplified, and then it kind of reboots.
And that is especially true with grunge, because when you go back and you look at all the careers Smells Like Teen Spirit killed, like, and you look at all the careers that Alive killed, and you look at all the like all of the careers that could have started but didn't because Nevermind came out, like
I think two kills is a funny the bands it killed, like Bon Jovi stayed around. Even though I'm not a big Bon Jovi guy, they, you know what I mean? Like certain bands that were still on that level, they got to stay. But the bands that were going to try to do that same thing, they had to go. Or the bands like, that were getting over,
like
but not
big,
quite.
Like Big,
Mr. Big,
Mr. Big, really big in Japan for some weird reason. But like weird things like that are weird. But and it's gotten a lot weirder now with the way streaming works.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is, because every genre out there is kind of, it's there is going to be someone that's making a certain type of music all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Is there going to be a rebuttal to the trap music that's coming out now? Is there going to be a rebuttal to some of the pop coming out now? I don't know.
Well, I think to some degree with the trap music, what did we see last year? A lot of the old heads releasing some stuff and getting a little rebirth, a little restart on their careers due to the fact that I wouldn't say they're attacking what's new, but they're giving you what they did isn't really out there as much anymore, so they're giving you that in their way. Now somebody's going to come along that mixes the two together.
Yeah.
And like, that, and they'll be off, and that's probably like, the bin that happens next, right?
Yeah. Like, dude, Eminem dropped a mid as heck, a super mid album in 2020, and everyone, not everyone, because I don't know if you know what's going on, Dad, but there's been a bit of an Eminem rebuttal recent times.
What do you mean?
As in certain online, like mainly like older Eminem, so like Encore, and then Onward.
Mm-hmm.
So, I kind of agree with that. Like, they've all been calling him really corny, and Revival is one of the worst. I've heard Revival. It's one of the worst albums I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I don't know why Eminem decided to replace Dr. Dre with Rick Rubin and get, like, rap rock beats. And it's a while, but this isn't about that conversation. What I think you think the next bend is going to be, I might agree. We just have to see with time.
Absolutely.
Because right now, trap is kind of going to the place that hair metal kind of was, and that right, most right. of these fads kind of were. Like, you see, oh, the Travis Scott burger.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Travis Scott and Fortnite.
Right. Nothing against Travis Scott, but now he's cashing in.
Now they're kind of... I hate throwing out the word sellout.
Right.
But there's something similar like that going on. I could see that being next to, say, MC Hammer doing the KFC commercial.
Right. Well, that's the thing, too, is once... a lot of times it doesn't uber affect the person who got to cash the checks.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for one thing, Pop Life can be... which is a fantastic Prince song, by the way, can be fleeting.
Yeah.
You have your moment in time. You need to capitalize on it, all that. What it hurts, it tends to hurt, is the next couple of people coming through that thing. Like the pushback may wind up being towards Travis Scott immediately. But he cashed his checks, and he's big enough. He'll get to do something on... He'll still get to do something on the other side. If it's good, it'll be good. The pushback towards him will affect... that guy who was hoping to go through that same window that just opened. Because that window is going to close behind him.
Yeah.
That's where the pushback hurts. Like Metallica wound up, you know, Metallica's been dealing with this pushback for years because they're the biggest band in the world or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Or at one time they were. They probably still are if you consider ticket sales. It does. Metallica still, though, you can push back all you want. They still come to your country and say, do you have a stadium around here I can play? It didn't hurt them. What it hurts is people that are trying to push through that same vein.
Yeah.
That they are. But anyway.
And should we go to our other segment?
New music.
What have we been listening to?
What have you been listening to, my dear friend?
I might have listened to some new stuff. I tried out that Justin Bieber album because you were talking about it.
Did you like it?
Not really. It's kind of... You know how some music is, like, good?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this music's, like, not...
There's two kinds of music. Good music and bad music.
And I'm not...
That's like, what
I'm
Lemmy even, said.
I'm not even one of those people who, like...
Paul Stanley also said it, but I'm going to credit Lemmy.
Like, saying Justin Bieber was bad back in, like, 2009... That wouldn't be a very controversial opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a controversial opinion now, but like, I always thought that people were being a bit unfair to Bieber. Just because he was a teen pop idol, that's why everyone hates him. Nah, so like, he did come off a little jerkish. Like, he's just jerk, just overall. And that blends into the music a lot. And,
not a Biebs guy.
No, I actually don't hate that one song that somebody else wrote for him. What was it? Love Yourself? Mainly just because of the line, my mama don't like you and she likes everyone. which is the deepest burn I've ever heard. Like, oof.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's about, I mean, I listened to this album, but that's about it. What did you listen to this week?
Let's see. Ella Fitzgerald and Duke Ellington. I listened to an album, Find My Way, from Paul McCartney featuring Beck. I found it. New music came out on Thursday. You know, I always check that out. Through the Fire. Grace Weber featuring Chance the Rapper. I thought that was pretty good. And you had Jesus in the Ghetto, which I found. Sir the Baptist featuring Anthony Hamilton. I found that to be kind of fascinating. I also found there's an older, very much older, punk band called The Living, which featured out of Seattle, which featured a young man called Duff McKagan. You may know of Guns N' Roses fame.
Exactly, because there's totally not a Funko Pop in this room of Duff McKagan right in front of me.
Oh, yeah, there he is, right there, Duff McKagan. I think that the story goes Stone Gossard has some form of a record label in the Seattle area, and he asked Duff. Obviously the Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden guys are younger than Duff. So when Duff was playing clubs, they were kind of sneaking into clubs or getting the tapes on the street, right? And he was in bands called The Fastback or The Living or whatever, The Farts, all that, right? Anyway, but point being, Gossard says, hey, I think what you guys did in this band that you had, The Living, was really cool, and I think it deserves to be put out there. Would you mind if I put it out there? And I think Duff, pretty amicable guy, was like, sure. And I found it's very much punk rock, very much that time period. And it makes you wonder, too, how many bands, because you listen to some punk, and it just really drives you crazy, because it's not, a lot of times the production in old punk is really bad. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But this production here is fine. It's pretty good, and it's rocking. But I do find moments when you can just kind of listen to Three Chords and the Truth Matter, brother. Yeah. Three Chords and the Truth Matters.
I was going to do a Kurt Cobain impression. Like, I was going to start singing Drain You, but, like, I just didn't have it. I was going to try, but I was trying to configure a way to, like, try to sing Kurt. I can't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you could have broke out with "I don't care, I don't care, I don't care anymore."
That would have been a better idea.
Yeah, I'm here for you.
Come on. Speaking of the grunge movement,
yes, let's fall into it.
Next week we will be listening to Pearl Jam's 10 and reviewing it. I think it's the 10th best album. I think it's the 10th best selling album ever. I think it was in the top 10, but I think it was at number 10. I don't know, but that was last time I checked. I don't remember. It's still up there though. Like it's
up there.
Yeah, it's big.
Especially if you know how people go, well, Van Halen 1 or Appetite for Destruction is the greatest debut album ever, right? Rock and roll circles, that's an argument that exists. It's a pretty legit one.
Yeah.
This one's there with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
especially you're talking about sales.
Right. Well, for me, as you know, a lot of these guys were in Mother Love Bone. So for me, it's kind of hard for me to say it's a debut album. Yeah. But that doesn't take away from the fact that this album is incredible. It has a lot of hits, and I can't wait to go through it for a week.
Listen,
I'm excited about this week.
Yeah. Pearl Jam didn't exist until Eddie Vedder showed up. All right. There's no,
right.
You can't.
Right.
You listen.
Yeah. We're going to break out the impressions next week, son. If you don't have an Eddie Vedder impression, you don't believe in rock music.
Exactly.
Is that a wrap?
That's one of the rules of rock. You can make an impression of Eddie Vedder. You cannot criticize Eddie Vedder.
Yes. There will not be a single bad word said about Eddie Vedder next week. Is that a wrap?
Yeah, that is a wrap.
Guys, go to the Ginn Project, G-I-N-N Project. Check out their store if you get a chance. Appreciate them partnering with us and helping us out a little bit.
This has been a Go Home Heat production. Signing off, go home.
Copyright 2021.